You are Locked On Raptors, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hi, welcome to an episode of Locked On Raptors. I think it's 462. Who gives a damn? I'm your host, Sean Woodley of RaptorsHQ.com. You know all the intro stuff I would typically read in this situation. Subscribe, rate, review, all that good stuff to the Locked On Podcast Network and its many shows on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play. None of that matters today. The Raptors decided to drop a big bomb on everyone's heads at about 2 o'clock this afternoon and went and traded for Marc Gasol. And here with me to break it all down is Josh Howe from Raptors Republic. What's going on, buddy?
Not too much. That was the best ambulance and or police siren and or fire truck alarm I've heard in a long time.
Well, I do live in East Hamilton, so, you know, I get a lot of the... I learned just a lot of inspiration to draw from. That's not fair. Hamilton's dope and very safe. Come live here. It's cheap. Anyway. Marc Gasol, not exactly cheap. He came at a price, for sure, and we're going to get to the emotional toll of the deal as well. I guess we should lay out the terms in case anyone hasn't heard what's happened. The Raptors have traded Jonas Valanciunas, CJ Miles, DeLon Wright, and a second-round pick in 2022? I believe, or 2024. They traded both of those picks today. We'll get to the second trade in a little bit. Doesn't really matter. But for Memphis Grizzlies center, Marc Gasol, three-time All-Star, one- or two-time Defensive Player of the Year, general guy who has done a lot of very good and mean things to the Raptors in the past, and, of course, one of the heart and soul members of the Grit and Grind teams, which I truly, deeply adored. And there's a lot to sort through with this deal. The Raptors are down to 10 players because they also sent Greg Monroe out to the Nets along with a second-round pick for cash considerations. I don't really understand that trade, but it's happened, and the Raptors have 10 players on the roster. I guess they will have, like, 7 or 8 guys tonight, plus, like, Chris Boucher and Jordan Lloyd, who might very well be in for full NBA contracts very soon here. But, Josh, what was your initial reaction to the trade? Do you like it? Are you mad? Are you furious? Are you overjoyed? Like, what is your mindset right now?
A lot of feelings.
That is going to be the theme of this one. Holy shit, the feelings.
Yeah, a lot of feelings. One of the first things I thought about was this Raptors team, this exact Raptors team that we've seen this season, it didn't really get a lot of run together, did it?
Nope.
Everybody was hurt like at different times, and we just didn't really end up seeing this team pull together. It was one of the things I was actually excited about in the game against Atlanta tonight, was getting to see the roster kind of fully back and healthy again. I mean, my first reaction was not really positive. I don't know. I mean, at this point in their respective careers, I'm not sure Marc Gasol's that much better than Jonas Valanciunas in terms of not just in a vacuum, which I think is arguable as well, but I think also in terms of fit on the team.
Okay.
Obviously, Gasol has other assets to his offensive game that Valanciunas doesn't. I mean, he's a much better passer. You know, the Raptors are going to have to learn to cut more, I guess, because he does a lot of that stuff where he stands at like the top of the key and he can make plays from there. So that kind of stuff could be fun and interesting and, you know, maybe take off some of the burden of Kyle Lowry. And there's good stuff there. It's more like the defensive end where I was concerned about him. His numbers have really fallen off there. Even watching him sometimes, he looks like he's just struggling out there a bit, lumbering a little, as it were. So, I don't know, some of that definitely is the situation at hand. I mean, you know, the guys like that, if he's in a situation that he isn't enjoying, doesn't like, then, you know, he probably just isn't as trying as hard. And, you know, the effort might be better coming to Toronto in a place where he knows that he has a chance to win and stuff like that. So that definitely is something to keep an eye on. But, I mean, there's also a chance that, you know, like the guy just turned 34 years old. Like he might just be getting older and he's on the decline. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's a real legitimate concern. But again, it's one of these things you have to say, we'll see. But I think there's some concerns about this. I don't think it's like a home run trade at all. What do you think about it?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's a home run. I think there's definitely some very real risk associated with it and some interesting fit concerns that we can get to as well. But I still think it's an upgrade. I think Gasol is just sort of a little bit better at a lot of things that just like a lot of things across the board than Jonas. I think the one thing Jonas is definitely better at is as a finisher, like around the basket on the roll.
Yeah.
He's definitely way more refined there than Gasol, but pretty much everything else I would kind of lean Gasol either by a little bit or by a lot. I mean, Gasol shooting 34% from three this season on 4.2 attempts. He shot 34% last year, 39% the year before, and that's, you know, 2016-17 is kind of the year where he kind of amped up the shooting side of things and sort of became a stretch five. And I just think, like, 34, maybe that seems uninspiring or whatever, but I think Jonas's three-point shooting, while fun and amazing whenever he launched them, was always just more kind of a gimmick to me than anything. Like, teams weren't worried about Jonas shooting threes. Teams were happy to let him do it. There was a reason he was able to pump fake seven times before launching every three. It's because no one was closing out on him, because that's a shot people were willing to live with. And it just never really turned into a weapon that I think the Raptors could really sort of use in the regular flow of a game, outside of just like the odd sort of like, oh, fluky possession where it comes to him at the top of the key when he's trailing. So from that perspective, I think Gasol is better. I think Gasol is a better passer. You know, there's not many big men in history that Gasol is not a better passer than. I mean, that's kind of the thing he brings to this thing that I'm really excited by. You know, we've gotten concerned about sort of the bogged down nature of the Raptors offense. And, you know, admittedly, going back to the DMs, Jacob Mack from Raptors HQ made a good point. Like, yeah, he's a great passer. And if it translates and they're able to incorporate it into the offense in short order, then hell yeah, that's an upgrade. But there's no guarantee that's going to be able to happen, because they only have 27 games. Plus, I would say whatever first round opponent they play, because who cares about Charlotte or Detroit or whatever team gets the 7 and 8 seeds. I think that'll be a pretty easy walk series for this Raptors team. I mean, knock on wood, because it's a first-round series in the Raptors, but I think it's safe to say that they've moved past being worried about first-round opponents at this point. So there's going to be some time, but not a lot. And if they can't get Gasol up to speed, the only real place in which you're getting a real benefit from his improved passing is as a role man and as sort of the guy making the decisions in 4-on-3 situations if Kawhi or Kyle receive extra defensive attention. And even if that's the only upgrade you get, I still think that's a nice upgrade to have, because, like, think of so many times in the past in the Raptors playoff history where they would have just these insane, awful, just possessions where it would come to Jonas or Serge Ibaka or someone like that, and they would just not have any wherewithal to make that play to move the offense along, and then things would break down and there would be turnovers or bad shots and it was a disaster. They got better at that, like, and Serge is better than that, and Jonas got significantly better at that stuff, but Gasol, there's just no question with him, and you know he's going to make a good play out of it, not just the easy or simple play. He's going to make a smart, maybe even like a brilliant play out of that and turn that 4-on-3 into a real advantage. So I think that's a nice upgrade to have too. Defensively, yeah, his numbers are down, and Jonas, people have cited that he's one of the leaders in rim protection numbers this season in terms of field goal percentage allowed at the rim. I think, as with both Gasol and Jonas, like, their numbers this season in particular, I think, are very much tied to the context in which they were accrued. You know, Jonas has been playing, for the most part, much like Serge Ibaka, who we'll get to in a little bit and how this all affects him, but, you know, Jonas has been playing against opponents against whom he is able to destroy. Like, this has been the entire sort of thing that Nick Nurse has strived for, is to have Jonas and Ibaka only playing in situations that optimize their skills and strengths, and so they're not being beaten up by a poor matchup, and there's just never a bad matchup when the Raptor centers were on the court earlier this year before Jonas got hurt. And Gasol on the other side, like you said, playing for Memphis, playing for, you know, J.B. Bickerstaff. If we had Keith Parrish from Fast Break Breakfast on last week, and he talked extensively about how bad a coach J.B. Bickerstaff is, and just how he has no ideas. He doesn't have any sort of intuition as to how to implement the team. And that roster, outside of Gasol, Jaren Jackson, and Mike Conley, is barren and a wasteland, and Bruno Caboclo-y. Like, he's playing real minutes. He's playing crunch time minutes for them right now. I just think the context within which, like, Gasol's been playing this year is not really conducive to personal success. And, yeah, I wonder if sort of the fallout with Dave Fizdale last year, whatever his role was in that. And, like, yeah, that's concerning as well. If he's sort of a bit of a coach killer or whatever you want to call it, like, maybe that's a concern, especially coming in if he's asked to take on fewer minutes or whatever it is with the Raptors. Like, these are all concerns. I just think the improvements that are going to be brought to the Raptors by this deal, sort of consolidating the rotation as well. You get rid of some of the questions about CJ Miles and DeLon Wright's roles. You just kind of consolidate that. You open up some roster spots for some potentially interesting buyout candidates as well. I think this is a smart move, a smart calculated risk. It, you know, and it could blow up. It could not work, and they'll be sitting there with a little bit less in the shed, although not that much because Jonas only had 1 year beyond this year, and it's a similar situation with Gasol, where I would imagine both are probably going to opt in. Maybe Gasol opts out. I don't really know, but I do think it's a nice little win now push to, and without giving up either OG or Pascal, who were sort of the white whales that I think most GMs were after in a Raptors trade. Like, I think it makes sense, and I think Gasol is going to fit pretty well. I guess let's talk about the fit, Josh, because this is not going to be super easy, or maybe it is. I've kind of talked myself into it being a lot easier than maybe we've made it out to be, but like, how do you think the big man triumvirate now of Gasol, Ibaka, Siakam should work in terms of who starts, who plays the most minutes, who plays with who? Like, how do you envision that all playing out? How would you like to see it play out?
Well, it's interesting. So, I mean, you could go back to the more traditional type of lineup that, you know, would have Gasol and Ibaka starting. Mm-hmm. But I don't think, I mean, from what we've seen from Nurse this season, that doesn't seem likely, I'd imagine. And now with Monroe moving as well, which I'm still a little confused about that deal. Mm-hmm. It would seem unlikely that he would want to have both starting unless he, you know, wants to have Ibaka in there for just a few minutes and then pull him out and bring him back with the bench. And in that case, you'd have Siakam coming off the bench, which could be useful or not. That's another thing, too. I mean, with DeLon going out in this deal, you know, that's another impact on the bench as well. And we've already had concerns about playmaking with the bench. Like, at this point, Nurse really can't have a full bench lineups out there. Like, he needs to have Siakam or Kawhi or Lowry out there. Like, absolutely needs to have the extra playmaking, or it's going to be even more brutal than usual. I would expect, just from assuming, I would expect that Gasol is going to start and Ibaka will come off the bench. But I think the Nurse is going to continue to play it matchup wise. I think he might have to have a talk with Gasol about it. I mean, I don't know where Gasol's at in terms of, like, being okay with potentially coming off the bench in some games. We know that Ibaka is because he's been doing it. So, I think that's the way it's probably going to work. I think it's okay either way, honestly, to have Siakam starting or coming off the bench. But, like, I do think he's really shown out in a starting role, and I think he likes being a starter and stuff like that. So it might take some ego management there on Nurse's part, and we'll have to wait and see. But yeah, I imagine it's going to be Gasol starting and Ibaka more off the bench and going by matchups like Nurse seems to like to do. And I would just guess that Siakam also stays a starter, but there's going to be a lot of staggering going on.
Yeah, I think that's good, too, because I think because the team was so deep and had so many guys that you could argue deserved minutes, like, I think it almost made it a little bit too tricky for Nurse, and he was almost too prone to just, like, throwing everyone out there and giving five guys off the bench a shot and just seeing what worked. And I think consolidating the rotation, again, I think kind of makes sense. And, like, let's not understate the importance of Norman Powell's development this season and kind of his, you know, reemergence back to being alive and good and useful. Without that, I don't think CJ or DeLon become expendable, but I think the way Norm's played kind of made it so that was something you could part with, and I think Norm's going to be a really useful part of that second unit. And I think in terms of the big men, I think it doesn't have to be that complex. If people are talking about, like, oh, Gasol and Ibaka don't fit together. Like, yeah, sure, they don't fit together. I don't think they're going to play together particularly often because I think Nick Nurse knows and has seen all season long that Ibaka is better at center too. So just because he has Marc Gasol now doesn't mean he's going to go, all right, Ibaka, back to power forward for you, because there's a whole season's worth or three quarters of a season's worth of sample of saying, hey, Ibaka should not be playing at power forward anymore. He's a center and he's very good at it. I also think coming into the year, Ibaka was slated to play off the bench, I think, a lot more than maybe he has. Obviously, Jonas getting hurt changes that, but, like, he was starting, I guess, two of every three games, I suppose. But I think Ibaka coming into the year, and I think both him and Jonas bought into the idea, like, yeah, if you're coming off the bench, it's not because of anything sort of insidious. It's because Nurse is trying to maximize what you're playing against and therefore maximizing your ability to put up good numbers, right? And so I think that's going to be the selling, you know, point that he sells to Gasol as well, if there is any sort of massaging. Maybe Gasol does have to come off the bench. Maybe there's a playoff matchup where Gasol off the bench makes more sense, say against, I don't know, like the... I don't even know if there is a team where that really makes that much. Maybe against, like, Brook Lopez. But, like, even then, the Lopez and Gasol are kind of like the Spider-Man meme at this point, except Marc Gasol's a bit of a better passer. So I think it doesn't have to be that tricky. You start Gasol, you have the starting five of Lowry, Green, Kawhi, Siakam, and Gasol, and when you say it like that, that sounds fucking dope to me. That's a really good lineup with a lot of defensive potential and not much in the way of holes and a lot of playmaking. You know, everyone in that lineup outside of, I guess, Green is a good passer, and everyone in that lineup can, aside from Siakam, is a reliable shooter or something close to it, and Siakam's working at it, and he's been pretty good from the corners this year. I just think that's a very nice lineup to throw out that kind of rivals most starting lineups across the league. And then if you have Ibaka come off the bench, maybe that forces Nurse to just go to the thing that we've always wanted, which is more Kyle with the bench, because it always works no matter what. And if you want to keep Kyle tethered to Ibaka, which I think is a good idea considering so much of Ibaka's success has come with Lowry on the court this season, I think that is really important as well. I also think we're kind of maybe overstating a little bit the importance of Ibaka playing with Lowry. I mean, Lowry missed like a whole month, and Ibaka was still pretty damn good in that time and put up numbers, maybe a little bit less efficient, but I don't think him and Fred are like this sort of poisonous matchup that doesn't work at all, or pairing that doesn't work at all. I think they can work at least a little bit against, especially against second units, right? It's not, they're not playing starters, they're playing second units in the most likely scenario now. So I think Ibaka off the bench is just what makes the most sense. And I do think all three of the pairings of the bigs, like, we kind of know they're going to work, right? Like, we know Ibaka Siakam works. We know that Gasol and Siakam, or at least it looks like it should work. And I think, you know, I don't want to see it particularly often, but I think Ibaka Gasol is better than, say, Ibaka Valanciunas because of Gasol's passing and because both of those guys can pop and it's just a bit more varied in terms of skill set. And they're both, like, better defenders than you notice, at least a little bit more mobile, at least. So I think it's not, like, it's not a bad problem to have too many good bigs with different skills that kind of fit together a little bit, you know, differently. It's just a matter of massaging the egos, I suppose, but I think Nurse has already shown this season that he's capable of that. And I guess it'll be tested if he's able to do it with Gasol after doing it with Jonas, who he had a relationship, obviously, for 5 years before this season and taking over as head coach. But I think it's doable. And ultimately, I think we'll see the second unit mostly be something like Fred, you know, Lowry swapping in, Fred kind of going in to finish the first quarter with the starters, and then we'll see Lowry play with Norm and OG and, God, who else do they have? Whoever they said, Wayne Ellington, perhaps?
Yeah.
Am I missing somebody? Or he'll play with Fred. What am I saying? Like, you can just play with Fred and Norm, and then you throw out OG at the four next to Ibaka, and I think that's a fine second unit.
The Raptors have four open spots right now, so
yeah,
that's partly why. I agree with what you're saying there. I think the main thing is you just don't want to have, like, if you moved Ibaka back to the starting four spot, he's essentially doing what he was doing last season, right? Which is just like floating around the perimeter and waiting to spot up, which is not what you want Ibaka doing at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So, especially this season when his shot hasn't really been there from 3-point range, so yeah, you definitely don't want him there. And yeah, he's been pretty consistent even with the second bench, with the bench unit. Like VanVleet's been a little better, like, in the past like month or so,
yeah,
of finding him in the pick and roll, pick and pop, because he's just like learning off of Lowry and figuring out, you know, this is how this guy wants the ball, and he's been better with that too. So that's kind of helped it out. So I'm not worried about that so much. I think Ibaka's gonna be fine if he came off the bench more as a bench center. Yeah.
And also, the starting lineup with Ibaka at center has been bad for 2 months. Like, -7.5 net rating bad. So,
Yeah. Maybe
it's time. Like, Ibaka's been great. I there's no disparaging Ibaka's season, but Nurse had an interesting comment a couple games ago, I guess it was. Maybe it was the game. It was against the Bucks, I think, where they had that bench unit that was in there that played pretty well, got them to within six a couple times. And the Nurse says something like, yeah, sometimes you ride it a little bit too long, and maybe we did that a little bit with that lineup, and you want to maybe get it out of there before things sort of turn. And I wonder if maybe that's sort of a full season approach you can take to Serge Ibaka. He's been awesome. He's been significantly better than I think anyone would have thought he was going to be coming into the season. I thought he was going to be just like a dead piece of carcass on the team, right? He was so bad in the playoffs. I had no hope for Ibaka. And like, I don't think he's going to fall off to last year's levels. I think the infrastructure is kind of set up for him to succeed, especially if he's playing with Lowry. But, you know, maybe the tail off is going to come at some point here, especially after all the load he's taken with Jonas out of the lineup. And, you know, maybe it's not a bad idea to just sort of move it back to the role that I think a lot of people coming into the year expected he would assume. I know I did. I thought it was going to be an inverse of what we saw. I thought Jonas was going to play like 28 minutes a game, and I thought Ibaka was going to be the bench big who came in and played 18 to 20. So it is going to be different for sure, but I think it kind of maybe makes a lot more sense as a puzzle piece sort of thing. If you kind of look at the full season picture, what the expectations were coming in and sort of how the last couple months have gone with Serge at center, like it seems almost too obvious to move him, have him come off the bench and then figure it out from there. And again, Lowry with the bench, baby. Let's do it more. Come on. Let's have more of that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, Ibaka, it's one of the things, like, I think he is just playing too many minutes, like, in the time that, you know, JV's been down. And I think most of us kind of saw that coming, that he was going to wear out a little bit, playing more, especially with watching him last year and seeing him, like, you know, coming off of games where he got rest as opposed to the, you know, back-to-backs and stuff where he looked like he was 50 years old. But, like, even statistically, like, the Raptors, prior to JV going down, they were 7th in the league in defensive rating. And since then, they've been 16th. Mm-hmm. So it's a big drop. So, like, even something like that, like, just bringing in a guy, like, you know, just getting – if we'd had JV back tonight or whatever, just having somebody there as well will just help Ibaka's case, I think, too. He just needs to take a step back and not have to play as many minutes, and the grind will be easier on him. So in that case, you know, that's something that Gasol coming to the team will help with as well.
Yeah, like, I mean, there's all this concern about sort of shaking up the formula, but maybe the formula kind of needed a shake up, and maybe the red flags were there the last couple months, and, you know, it maybe this is kind of exactly what they need to sort of change things around. Let's get into sort of the bigger picture, sort of long-term projection-y stuff that comes from this trade. This is obviously a very much win now, like go for it this season type of move. Gasol is a player option for next year for like $24-25 million. So and I have no idea whether he's going to take that or not, whether he wants to try to cash out one more time with some maybe a smaller hit, but for some more years of security, or what he's going to do. Obviously, we know the Kawhi thing. And, like, I don't know how much this deal will sway Kawhi. I do think it's not a bad thing to show a guy, like, hey, we're willing to make bold moves to go and win the thing. Like, I think that's probably, in the net, a pretty good thing. Are you concerned about, like, does this, like... It doesn't really derail them at all in the future, is the thing. I think, you know, Gasol and Lowry and Ibaka all kind of line up perfectly, right? If Gasol sticks around... Like, you can move those guys this summer, and maybe Gasol won't stick around if Kawhi leaves, and maybe that's just space you open up if he leaves. But, you know, I think the timeline works pretty well. They didn't give up Siakam or OG. They only gave up the first-round pick for Kawhi, and they didn't go give up, you know, first-rounders down the road. Like, does this concern you at all about the trajectory of the team, or are you very much okay with the minor trade-offs for the sort of more perceived vision of going all-in for it this year?
No, that part is actually the part that concerns me the least. Like you said, he kind of fits the timeline. Even if he opts in for next year for 25, like, it's not that big a deal because right after that he's going to be a free agent. So not that concerned about it. It puts away the concern about having to deal with the Lon Wright's restricted free agency come the summer where, you know, you would have had to deal with Kawhi and then you would have to see, you know, what team is going to offer DeLon, potentially a big offer sheet and if you want to match it and all that stuff. As a team that's going to be paying luxury tax this year. So that was going to be a concern. But yeah, I mean, yeah, no, he matches the timeline. You know, you trade off Valanciunas and Wright and Miles and who are all on the same sort of similar timeline. And I mean, JV, it was just for less money, but he was on the same sort of deal, basically, exactly, as a player option for next year. I mean, I do think Gasol is going to opt in because I don't think the market for bigs is going to be that great this summer.
Yeah.
But, I mean, yeah, it's one of those things you wait and see. But honestly, like, that part doesn't concern me at all, no.
Yeah, I think I'm with you there. Before we get to the guys going out, let's talk about some guys who might potentially be coming in. We have no idea. There are a million guys being bought out. Enes Kanter is being bought out today by the Knicks. Wes Matthews as well. Apparently he's going to sign with the Pacers, which, honestly, kind of a win. I'm down for that. He might make a 4-5 series between them and a Celtics or Sixers a little more tricky. But ultimately, I'm just glad he's not on like the Bucks or the Sixers. That's good for the Raptors, I think. In the aggregate, even if he's not signing with the Raptors themselves, is there anyone in the buyout market that like you would like to see? Let's assume Chris Boucher gets one of the four remaining spots before the 14-man, because I don't think they're going 15. I think you know the Monroe thing. I don't understand. I'm guessing it's some sort of tax thing where like they don't have to like buy him out, and thus they're saving money by just giving up the second round pick and saving tax. But like, so that's fine, but. You know, Boucher, I'm assuming, gets one of those spots. Maybe Jordan Lloyd gets another. Is there anyone else that you're kind of have your circling as buyout guys that you're hoping the Raptors can pick up here?
Yeah, I think it's got to be Wayne Ellington, right?
Yeah.
He's a Wes Matthews type, maybe a little less at the defense, but he's got the shooting. Obviously, that's something that the Raptors have struggled with this year, is just having a shooter. I would think of him as like basically a CJ Miles replacement. If the Raptors are able to land him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously Raptors fans know very well what Wayne Ellington can do. He's killed the Raptors a couple times on Miami. I think he'd be the number one target. After that, there's a lot of guys on the buyout market, a lot of surprising names, kind of like Zach Randolph's going to be on the buyout market. Like you mentioned, Enes Kanter, like a bunch of guys.
Yeah.
But I think Ellington's like, the first guy, the guy they'll chase at the start anyway.
Yeah, I don't know if I would prioritize a guy like Ellington. I mean, I would like to see Ellington. That'd be great if they could get him. Sure. I don't really know how many wing minutes are going to be available, but I do wonder if maybe there's I think a backup point guard is probably the guy I'm looking at. Like a third point guard, you know what I mean? Like a Shelvin Mack is out there, I think. I think he got released today by the Hawks. Maybe Jeremy Lin gets bought out. That'd be like my number one choice, I think, Jeremy Lin. You know, I think he'd be a perfect fit. I think, you know, it's hard to find like a point guard that matters, right? Like where's Anthony Carter when you need him? Where's Derek Martin? I'd be down for any one of those guys. But I think just having some insurance in case Lowry goes out with any sort of more back ailment issue or Fred kind of struggles. I mean, both of those guys kind of have wonky backs. So that makes me worry a little bit in terms of insurance. But maybe you just get point Pascal in that situation and we're all happy and tickety-boo. But what are your thoughts on like a big man? Like, do you think they're set with the three guys they have and then Boucher, or would you like another guy to sort of throw in another dude in the mix? Like what's your thinking there?
I mean, the front court is where they're thinnest still. Mm-hmm. So I think Boucher probably will get converted to a full contract. I wouldn't be surprised. I like Boucher a lot. He's one of those guys that's so interesting because he's too good for the G League level, but he's still got some stuff at the NBA level, like defensively, that kind of keep him, you know, as a third stringer.
Mm.
I think there's a good chance he gets converted. I mean, there's some interesting big names. I mean, a name that a lot of people seem to be throwing around is Markieff Morris, who got bought out. Or is being bought out. I can't remember which at the moment. But, and the Markieff thing is, I feel really really weird about it because he was on those Wizards teams and just a tough guy for maybe Raptors fans to root for. But at the same time, his game is interesting for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see. The buyout market is... I don't know. Things will happen. I'm sure there'll be like random dudes who get bought out, and guys we haven't even envisioned yet. So we will see what comes of that. The buyout market, guys, I don't think will ultimately really matter that much. Like, I think probably if you're looking at what the 9-man rotation is going to be, unless something crazy happens, I think it's probably already on the team, if that makes sense. But you know, people know me. I'm skeptical about buyout guys. Congratulations on the Sixers last year getting the only two good buyout guys ever. Like, I just don't think that's going to replicate itself. But it could. We'll see. Before we wrap here, we should probably talk about the guys leaving. I'm probably going to do a more extensive podcast on this, but Jonas Valanciunas was the longest serving Raptor. It is now Kyle Lowry, which I think is fitting. Number one, above all else, I'm glad the Raptors didn't do something dumb and trade Kyle Lowry, because that would have sucked ass, and I would have enjoyed every single success this team might have had with someone else playing point guard a little bit less because Kyle Lowry wasn't there. I firmly believe that I would like just have they won the title. I'd just be like, yeah, but Kyle wasn't there, so do I really care? I don't know. Obviously, it would change in the moment, but I think Kyle was kind of the one untouchable in my heart, at least. Jonas would have been close because, like, he's been around forever, and he's a lovely guy. He's been looking so good on the sidelines the last couple weeks. He's become the apple of everyone's eye. And it's hard to see him go. Do you have any thoughts on the departure of Jonas? Do you have any memories of Jonas? It's a tough one to say goodbye to, man.
Yeah, he's been around for so long. It just feels like he's a staple of Raptors basketball now. Mm-hmm. You know, you think of a Raptors big man, you kind of think of Jonas Valanciunas. There's not too many that necessarily that you think of before him by this point, right? I mean, there's a few, obviously, like Chris Bosh, and then some of the other more likable ones or infamous ones like Bargnani or whatever. But Valanciunas is right up there. He's a guy that consistently upped his game in the playoffs, which was exciting every year. He's always so amped anytime he does anything. Like, you know, gets an and one play and he screams and roars, makes for some of the best sports photos from the Raptors game. It's just, you know, a player that worked really hard and continued to get better, and he's been really great this year. And one of the most divisive players for Raptors fans.
I'm almost gonna miss like the JV Hive versus the world thing, man.
Yeah.
I won't at all, but you know, I'm sure in its absence there will be some sort of longing.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, one of those guys that is almost like a debate fodder, right? And when you're at the barber shop or something, and you talk about does the coach use him right, and yeah, and all those storylines about Dwayne Casey not wanting to play him in the fourth quarter, and all of this stuff, and how Nurse was using him mostly as a backup this year, and all that stuff, and you know, how personable he was, and mm-hmm, he's willing to do whatever to you know, help the team win, and yeah, man, he's a super lovable guy. For some reason, Itty Bitty Ballers is sticking out in my head. Everything. He's definitely one of the, you know, he should be a fan favorite. I think Jonas Valanciunas is, you know, he was nothing but professional in his time at the Raptors. There was that, like, one moment, you know, he's like a kid, but he had the DUI moment, but whatever.
Yeah, right before the playoffs, right? Or, like, after game one or something like that?
Yeah.
Wasaga, baby!
Yeah, Wasaga, yeah.
It's not funny. Don't drink and drive, kids. It's very bad. But yeah,
yes.
I mean, he still is a child. He's so young.
Yeah,
it's like 25, 26 now. 26. Yeah.
Well, I can't say it because he's older than I am. But still, I love that guy. Definitely a fan favorite leaving Toronto. So he'll be missed for sure.
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever been as mad as a Raptors fan as I was when the Raptors took Jonas Valanciunas ahead of Brandon Knight. I was real fucking mad, and obviously that was stupid, but Brandon Knight just got traded to the Cavs, which is the death knell of all death knells right now. Poor one out for Wade Baldwin and Nick Stauskas. They need a podcast together.
Do you know, have you been keeping track? How many times has Stauskas been traded now? Is it like four times?
Oh, in total? Well, there was the Sixers weird salary dump thing from the Kings. There was, I think he just got cut by the Sixers, if I'm not mistaken. And then he signed with like the Nets, maybe? And then signed, did he get traded to Portland? And then he got traded to the Cavs, and then traded to Houston, and traded to the Pacers, and then he got cut. So, it's rough. Maybe he's one of the buyout guys.
That'd be kind of fun.
If there is one thing that the deal has definitely sapped the Raptors of, it's likability. Like, they're still terribly likable because, like, Kyle, I love him with all my heart, and you've got Pascal, and there's lots of likable... Danny Green, very likable team still. I think Marc Gasol will endear himself at some point. I think there's maybe some bad reputation stuff with the coach relationships going on in in Memphis. But hey, maybe Dave Fizdale is kind of a lot to be around. It seems to have kind of transferred to his dealings with guys in New York as well. So maybe it's not all Gasol there. Maybe that's that is on Fizdale as well in part. But Valanciunas was terribly likable, man. Like, he, like, probably the funniest guy on the team. The very dry sense of humor, the very funny signs he would hold up behind guys having milestone nights. The just like the loud guttural yells he would release just like in the background of other guys' media scrums sometimes. The Borat impressions, of course. How could anyone forget? And then, yeah, I remember like the sort of the mythology that was kind of around him when he had the year where he stayed in Europe, and then we all just saw the video and stuff from his Lithuania time, and it was like, oh man, we're getting Joakim Noah, baby. And then he was not Joakim Noah at all because they made him like bulk up to this like chunker, but he made it work. And credit to Jonas for being one of the few sort of relic-y old big men who kind of made his way and survived the changes, right? Like, he very easily could have been Roy Hibbert, but he adapted his game. He became more of a role man than he was a poster-upper by the end, and it's not like he's dead. He's going to Memphis, where he's probably going to average, like, 25 and 11 because the Grizzlies have nothing. But, like, I think he really sort of adapted himself to be not a modern player per se, but someone who could survive in the modern NBA. And he deserves a lot of credit for that. And yeah, just nothing but good stuff to say about Jonas. As much as like I derided him at times, and yeah, there were times where I was certainly very much out on Jonas, and I don't think that was an insane thing to be at the time. You know, his defense was really, really laughably bad at times. He got played off the court a lot of the time. But if he got the right matchup, man, poor DeAndre Jordan, poor Andre Drummond, poor Hassan Whiteside in the playoffs before those two both got hurt and ruined the only good thing about that series. You know, there was a lot of really good stuff with Jonas as well. I'll never forget the dunk he had on Boban in the game season opener in 2015-16, I believe it was. That was great when he, or it might have been 16-17, when he dunked on Boban. Boban bit on the pump fake, got yammed on. Do you have a favorite Jonas game?
In particular, I'd have to think about the thing that's sticking out of my head right now is just the last time he was healthy and Toronto played the Sixers and he was kicking at Embiid's butt.
Yeah.
Like, this is arguably the best center in the league in Joel Embiid, and Valanciunas just came out and just took it to him, like, over and over. It was awesome. It was so cool. It's those kind of moments, you know, where he's a guy that he doesn't back down. He you know, gets his game up a notch when he has to go against guys like that. He takes those kind of matchups personally, and that was always one of my favorite things about him, was that he has that competitive fire to that degree where he's like, oh, okay, you're the best center in the league? Well, not tonight. And that was, you know, that's just a moment that I'm never going to forget, that moment for sure.
He's better than Drummond, per Masai. Oh, yeah. Don't forget about that. another one of my favorite games, and better than Embiid, by the way, on that note that you mentioned. just like constantly a foil for Embiid that I hope the Raptors aren't going to terribly miss. Although, you know, Marc Gasol, pretty damn good post defender, so I think they'll be okay there. But yeah, better than Drummond. What other game? I mean, that whole playoff run before he got hurt against Miami in Game 3, he was outstanding. I remember the 19 rebounds he had, the 11 offensive boards in Game 1 against Indiana. They lost that one, but then he came back out at 23-15 in Game 2 of that series. And then I think my favorite Jonas game ever was Game 1 against the Heat. Yes, they lost that game, but he was the reason they were... Yeah. Close in that game. Like, that was a horrible Lowry game. Lowry's like only moment of not sucking was the half court heave, and Jonas carried them into overtime and then through the overtime as well. He might have been the only Raptor to score in the overtime, if I'm not mistaken. Like, he was insane. So even though they lost that one, probably among my favorites. And then the one where he got hurt, man, that's just, it sucks. It was a bummer where he got hurt in Game 3 against Miami. He had 16-12 in 22 minutes. And he goes down, the ankle kind of buckles on him, and then the Raptors obviously make it. And I don't think him missing the rest of the playoffs, or, you know, up until the last two games of the Cleveland series really mattered all that much in the sort of grand scheme of things, because he wasn't really a Cleveland matchup type player. But it sucked to see him go out when he was kind of having his moment, right? And it will, you know, I'll always remember that. Jonas was great. CJ Miles, sad to see him leave. Sad to see Lauren Miles leave. Sad to see the CJ's PJ's ads go. He just released the onesie line and it's gone now. It's tricky. It's difficult. But Very good.
CJ, one of the best locker room guys by far.
Absolutely. Smiley, great. Yeah, him and Jonas, two of the best media guys on the team. So that's going to be a loss as well, especially with DeMar going. And Jakob Poeltl, too. Lots of good guys to talk to or have left the locker room. Hopefully some guys come in and replace that. I know Marc Gasol is usually a pretty good guy to talk to as well, so that's good. And then do you have a standout CJ moment? Mine is when he hit the three over John Wall in the playoffs last year. I think it was game two.
Yeah.
Other than that, I can't really think of one. But maybe it was the relief to know that he was not Damari Carroll.
Definitely. I don't know if I have like a specific moment, but there were like, you know, there were a few games, multiple games, especially around like early last season when he was just starting the team, and there was like a couple of games where he just came out and hit like four or five threes.
Yeah.
And you know, like those, once he'd hit like two or three and he would come down and he kind of heat check himself, and I always love the way he's always so fluid. He's like, he's at his best when he's moving into the shots and like continuously moving.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought that was always so aesthetically pleasing, so gorgeous, the way he, you know, would float around the arc and then he'd see something developing and he just kind of slip right into the spot he needed to be in as the ball's coming, and he catches it on the move and then rises and fires, and you know it's good already because he's hit two or three shots.
Mm-hmm.
And I always thought those moments with him were really just like kind of basketball purity in terms of shooters, and that kind of stuff I thought was always really cool.
Yes, the smile will also be missed, as will the quick fire threes with CJ. And then DeLon, this one also kind of hurts, although I think it kind of helps the Raptors get out of a bit of a sticky situation this summer, because I don't think DeLon had kind of, I don't want to say he didn't warrant it, but he hadn't really played himself into a handsome contract going forward. I think it was probably going to get a little ugly, restricted free agency perhaps, you know, qualifying offer with Wright this summer. So I think this probably gets them out of having to make a tough decision that they didn't want to make. But, you know, he also brought much joy. It's kind of a bummer. We never really got to see a full, I mean, last year, I guess, was the closest thing to it when he was so great with the bench. But even then, he missed a lot of time with the shoulder injury. Like, the injuries are always kind of a problem with him. But one of the most fun players I can remember watching with the Raptors. Like, just in terms of, like, the stuff he could do. It's like him, it's like Terrence Ross dunks, DeLon Wright Euro steps, and just sort of, you know, weird finishes around the basket. Maybe like Jamario Moon dunks sometimes. Like, very short list of guys who could, you know, make a highlight on a single play, like kind of out of nothing. So I'm going to miss that about DeLon. Do you have a specific DeLon memory or game that stands out to you?
Yeah, it's got to be DeLon versus Kelly Oubre.
Yeah.
And I love that so much. The block at the end of game six.
Yes.
Just so, it was one of the best feel-good moments of that playoff run.
Were you on the Drunk Party podcast I did after game six?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think you were. And yeah. I think we reveled in that DeLon Blanc on Kelly Oubre quite a bit. It was great. he was great in the playoffs last year, man.
He was. Game one
against the Wizards, the game one win, which was the elusive game one win. He had 18 points, 4 assists, 3 steals on 7 of 10, hit 3 of 4 threes. He had an 18-point game in game 5 against the Wizards. Like, he was great. Not so great against the Cavs, but no one was really all that great against the Cavs except for OG or Kyle. So what are you supposed to do about that? But yeah, DeLon will always it sucks. The gang of Utes has broken up now. This sucks.
Yeah, R.I.P. Bench Mob.
Yeah, though the Bench Mob is entirely gone, yeah.
Yeah.
It was, I just got sad. I also got sad earlier thinking that Jonas isn't going to be there for DeMar's return game a couple weeks from now.
Oh, yeah.
And not going to lie, welled up a little bit at that thought. It sucks. It's a bummer.
I hadn't thought about that until just now. I'm feeling it. Oh,
yeah.
My goodness.
Yeah, and Jonas will get a really good reception when he's back, I'm sure. Or, like, half the arena will cheer and the other half will boo or something. I don't know. But I put Jonas coming into this year, and I don't think it's changed. I think it's probably stayed stagnant. I put him number 6 on the all-time Raptors list. Like, he did a lot over a long time, was very consistent. Maybe didn't have the room to blossom, but maybe didn't earn the room to blossom with his defense. I don't know, but Jonas Valanciunas will be missed. Marc Gasol, very excited for him. I think this is going to be good. I'm talking myself more and more into it. At the time, I was very scared about the return, but they didn't even give up a first-round pick for it. I think that's a nice win, and I think he is going to fit in super nicely. Just think of a, like I said, that Kyle, Green, Kawhi, Siakam, Gasol starting five is pretty goddamn bonkers, especially when you have Serge Ibaka coming off the bench, and OG, and Norm. It's and Fred, it's still a really, really good team, if a little bit thinner and in need of some help on the bench. But that's going to do it. Hope everyone enjoyed this podcast. I certainly did. It was kind of a wild-ass day, but sorry we didn't do a tribute to Greg Monroe. He was fine. He had nice eyes. We did a good podcast about him in the summer, myself, Katie, and James. That is my favorite memory of Greg Monroe, because the on-court stuff was bad. But... yeah, we'll, of course, keep you covered on all of the goings-on with the signings that I'm sure are to come in the coming days. Josh, do you have anything you want to plug right now?
Yeah, you can find me at Raptors Republic. I am tonight, hopefully, don't quote me on this, but I'm bringing back the Writers Write podcast for my own Marc Gasol episode, sort of an emergency pod. We'll see if I'm able to keep it consistent from there. But the Writers Write podcast is coming back. Anthony Doyle is going to be coming on for that, so it should be a good one. And yeah, other than that, you can just follow me on Twitter at Howvolution.
Fantastic. All right, thank you so much, and we will talk to you next time with hopefully a less ambulance siren necessary podcast in coming days. But we'll talk about the Hawks game tomorrow. If any signings happen between now and then, we'll fill you in. And we'll probably have someone on to talk more about the feelings aspect of all of this, because this is kind of, it's not as ghoulish as the DeMar trade, but it does kind of sap a little bit of the love and joy that this team has had for a little while. And it's confusing emotionally if a good trade on the surface. Anyway, that's going to do it. Thank you so much, and we will talk to you next time on Locked On Raptors.